Hello, welcome everyone to the Board Game Barbecue. This is episode 270, brought to you by Advent Games and our wonderful patrons. It's Jules here today hosting, and I've got the Queensland crew. We've got Dana. How are you doing, Dana?
Good, thank you, Jules. And you?
I'm doing really well. And we've also got Adrian. How are you doing?
I'm great, mate. I'm fantastic. I hear you're joining me for Boxing Day this year.
Yeah, that is the plan. So I'm very excited to do Queensland Christmas this year. That will be excellent. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah.
I hear that the Boxing Day shenanigans are something to behold.
Yeah. Well, we've decided that we're going to try and build a slip and slide under the zip line.
Nice.
And that will just turn to chaos. We've tried to figure out a way to stop you hitting the metal pole at the end. Mm-hmm. So far we've come up with putting a bunch of inflatable toys at the end. That's as far as we've got.
You know what the best thing to do is? Because I ran, this was back in my younger days anyway, ran like a, that's nasty. my younger days anyway, I used to run a mud obstacle course at school. Hay bales. You get some hay bales.
Yes.
And you put them at the end. It's the best thing. There you
go. I have to talk to my farmer.
They're actually quite easy to get. You live in the country. What are you talking about?
True that. I'll find someone.
No, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, what else has been going on, you guys? Because, you know, apart from, I haven't been playing a lot of games recently, and it's been a little while since I've been on the podcast. I think it was actually before South by Southwest, because I've been so busy with work flying to Melbourne and Queensland running events for trading card games, which has been really fun, but not a lot of game playing going on in that time. But what about you guys? What have you been playing at the moment?
Well, I wasn't going to be on today because technically the guest canceled us. So I just didn't really, think much about it, but I've actually been playing a lot of games and a lot of really great games that I just didn't even really know about, to be fair. One of them I did, granted, I backed it on Kickstarter, but I just didn't look into it. Do you know what I mean? I was like, that looks pretty cool. Let's put some money into that and see what happens. And that was Flip Town.
Oh, yes.
Man, like, I spoke to Mitch about it and he wasn't like overly impressed with it. He said it was fine. He played it solo. It's definitely a solitaire game. There is no interaction with any other players, not like in Cartographers, where you swap the sheets and things like that. That just doesn't happen in this game. But yeah, it was really good. I really enjoyed it. It does give me Three Sisters kind of vibes, like these combos.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Combos and I, admittedly, the first game was terrible. Like, I did really badly because I couldn't see the combos and how they all link together and how, rather than taking 3 or 4 points now, you almost take a negative point to then build up more points further on in the game by different actions and different abilities. But it has really interesting tracks and how they all interact. And you know how people love the feel of dice, right? They love the rolling of the dice and they love that tactile feel. I definitely get the same vibes when it comes to a traditional set of cards. Like the king, the ace, the queen, the poker cards. I love that. And in this game, you actually, as a bonus at the end of each round, you're making these poker hands to give you these bonuses. And yeah, I just really dug it. It's all on little, what do they call when it's like a whiteboard and you have the marker pen and you just wipe it off? Like, what's that called?
A whiteboard? A
dry erase marker?
Dry erase.
Yeah. Okay. But what's the piece of material that you're writing on technically?
Oh, microfiber cloth. Oh, piece of material.
Yeah.
It's just a whiteboard.
It's just a whiteboard.
Yeah, okay.
There's no name for it.
Plastic whiteboard thing, like whatever it's called. You get to plastic write on card. That. And, yeah. And it's just super simple. Like, it's really simple, really fun. I love the way that the cards interact with the game and the different spaces, but I've only played it like 4 times and that was over the past couple of days. I'd like to play it more. I definitely I loved Fleet. I still love Fleet. And when I played Three Sisters, I still preferred Fleet. For me, this is like on par with Fleet. Like I really enjoy it. Because dice are not as interesting to me. Like rolling the dice is cool. And in Fleet, the cool thing is you interact with the players by taking different dice and almost, you know, blocking people a little bit and hate drafting to a degree. You know, they want those three coins to get another star. I'm going to take the three coins myself. You can do that. In this, it doesn't have that, but just the feel of the cards and the shuffle and the trying to make these poker hands and stuff to me is really appealing. And it's set in that Western kind of world. And that's why I thought Mitch would love it. I was like, as soon as I played it, like, this is amazing. Mitch would love this. And then I messaged him and he was like, nah, it's okay. But he wants to play it more before he sort of forms a proper opinion on it. But yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed it. And I can see this game just getting binge played constantly. So yeah.
What do the cards smell like?
I don't know. I never sniffed them. I'm not a sniffer. Like, yeah, I don't know. I just like it's set in a Western. The cards, the King, Queen and all that, and the Jack, they're all sort of Western themed poker deck, sort of a poker deck, but it's Western themed with different bandits and different people on the cards. Yeah, I thought it was a great game and I'm really glad I backed it. And I almost backed, I believe they had a print and play option, which I almost backed, which I'm very glad that I didn't because I would have been way too lazy to print all that stuff out.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a lovely little box. It's really well done. Yeah, for me, I really enjoyed it. So
I must admit, for me, when I'm doing roll and writes or flipping writes, I do not like using a dry erase boards. I much prefer using a pen and pencil and things like that. I don't know. It's just it feels messy, you know, when you're on a whiteboard, and I have a tendency, because I'm very uncoordinated, I have a tendency to lean on it and then rub part of it off and things like that. I much prefer the pen and pencil type thing.
Well, I'm left-handed, so I often have that issue of like smudging stuff as I write. But this thing, it's so small, like you just like putting dots on things.
Oh, dots. Okay.
It doesn't have much. Well, you can choose. You could draw, you know, the works of Picasso on each icon if you want, but I just do a dot. But it's really good. And there's these like powers that you can have. So you can actually play different characters in the Western. So you can be like a bandit or you can be a prospector, and they have like an asymmetrical power that's involved with the game. And we didn't really use those yet, but I like the idea of using them, even though it would bring certain amounts of imbalance to the game. It's just something that they've added to make it a bit more fun. So if you're the prospector, you know that you want to get a lot of gold because you can turn the gold into points more so than the bandit who will rob the stagecoach and get a bigger benefit. So yeah, I really dug it. I really enjoyed it. So I'm definitely going to keep playing it. So
that's Flip Town. What about you, Dana? What have you been playing?
Well, I recently acquired, and this is really because I've got a problem. I've got lots of problems, but the process of researching games is like an addiction to me. The actual process of, and I was talking about it with a friend today, just watching the reviews and reading forums or reading geek lists, you know, and trolling through the Board Game Geek hotness. And
what's a geek list? For those who don't use Board Game Geek, because I don't.
Oh, it's like on Board Game Geek, people can put up their own lists, and it might say my 10 favorite worker placement games. That kind of thing. So you could read those. And I could spend hours doing that. And we were even talking about it today, and we finally find this game which we know is going to be a hidden gem or something like that, and we order the game. And it's almost like not exciting even getting the game. It was the enjoyable part was actually researching the game, which is weird. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else is like that. But anyway, I just research prolifically. But this is where I came up with this particular game, which was, it's called Djinn, spelled DJINN.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've heard of it or not. I found out about it from Board Game Geek, but they were talking a little bit about it at Essen. And it's designed by Benjamin Schwer. I think that's how you pronounce it. And have you ever heard of a game called Crown of Amara?
Oh, it does. That one rings a bell.
Yeah. It's often called a hidden gem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just not very well known. Anyway, he's designed another game which probably no one will know about, but is a hidden gem as well, and it's along a similar lines. But I was able to play that, and I really liked it, and it falls into that wheelhouse for me that seems to be becoming more popular, certainly with my game group, are those really medium weight games. They're not heavy games. Like trying to get out Weather Machine or something like that it's just, I don't know,
no for our go. Group,
it's just all too hard. You know, it's just all too hard because we talk a lot, we eat a lot of cheese.
And,
man, I love cheese.
I've got to tell me you. Too.
I understand your pain of the talk a lot. Don't worry. I definitely get that.
What, so. As in you think I talk too much?
No. I'm vibing with you. I talk way too much. Our Kingdom Death Monster group, we sat there for 90 minutes before we even started to talk about the game.
That's what we do.
We just talked rubbish. It was great. I like that more than the game.
That's what we do. We talk for like 2 hours and we have lunch and then we play with the dogs and whatever else. And, you know, like, so heavy games just are just becoming too difficult. As much as I want to play them, they're just too difficult to play. But anyway, so this has got a very low rules overhead and it's still very satisfying. So you've got a map, like a circular map of a town with little pathways going in between little towns. So it's like an area, like a city, and there's like little districts. And there are 6 djinns on the board. And I don't know if you know what djinns are. Do you know what
djinns are? Genies.
They're like little genies. Yeah, like little genies. So you've got these 6 boss djinn or big djinn, and then a bunch of other little djinns around. That doesn't sound right. It almost sounds racist when I call them djinns, but sorry.
Is that how you pronounce it?
The djinn. D is silent.
It's silent. D is silent, but it sounds ridiculous. But anyway, I prefer to say genie. But anyway, the game ends when you get rid of 6 of the boss djinns, and you're moving your mage, you're a mage, and you're trying to protect the town from these djinns. And whoever performs the best get promoted into the ranks and win the game and save the day. And it's really great because you've got this mage meeple that moves around the town. And there's 2 different kinds of spaces. There's circular spaces and square spaces. And the square spaces are sort of fairly mediocre actions that you can do. And then there's circular spaces that are upgraded actions. And you're going to be moving in between them. But the thing is that you can't move backwards.
Oh, right.
So
okay.
For you to get around to all these upgraded actions, it takes you a while because you're having to go sort of the long way around.
Yeah.
Because you're unable to move backwards. Plus if you're on a similar space to another player, you have to pay them. So you're sort of taking the long way around a little bit, but you're going into different areas. Like I'm trying to think of the different areas, like the Magical Academy and all these different whimsical or magical areas. And you're basically, it's an exchange of resources to try and get enough power to overcome these djinns, which will give you points. And it's really cool because you get to put them in little bottles. You get to collect little bottles. There's 4 different coloured bottles with corks. They're not like 3D, but they've got little corks. And you get to put them in bottles, and collecting sets of them will give you victory points. And it's such a fun game. And we played it at 4 players, and actually it's a really good game at 4 players because it's nice and crowded on the map. So you can play it at 2, but I don't think it would be as good at 2. But it's really, really, it's nice and crunchy, or crunchy enough, I'd say. And it was crunchy enough to the point where we were all sort of working on our little engines because you get to hire other majors to help you and get equipment. And we're all sort of working on our little tableau and our engines. And we sort of got to the end of the game and realized, oh, we didn't even look at the end of round goals, like the end of game goals at all. It was a really good game. And I think it's one of those games that's going to be another hidden gem. I'd highly recommend it. It was so enjoyable. And that's from I didn't mention the publisher, but it's from Hole Games, which I've not heard of actually.
No, I don't know them.
And Pegasus Spiel. So,
very good.
Yeah, but very, very good.
So, in the short amount of time I have had to do some gaming, I've been doing a bunch of solo gaming as well. That's what I've been able to fit in. At the moment, there is a game on Kickstarter that quite a few people in the Discord have been talking about because the artwork has been very striking. That's called Valka. Mm. I don't know if you guys have seen this one floating around in the chats.
No. I saw your photo of that game and I thought, oh, you're lucky to get that.
Yeah. So I did some digging on this game and found out it's a Melbourne artist and designer. It's just been published by a publisher overseas. I think they're called Terrible Games is the publisher. Great name for a publisher.
So we've got Horrible Games and now we've got Terrible Games.
Yeah, that's it. So I reached out and said, hey, do you have a copy that I can, give a go and then talk about and review? And they said, yeah, I've got one copy. I'll send it to you. So the designer was kind enough to send their copy of Valka. And I haven't got to dive deep into this. I only had a little bit of time to have a crack at it. But the artwork is absolutely stunning. It is so captivating, so weird. It's really, really charming, some of the monsters that you get to fight with. I haven't tried the multiplayer experience yet, just had a crack at the solo, and it is very hard. So you have like a warband of creatures, and you're trying to make your way through the land and destroy different piles of monster cards, and you get upgrades, you've got to manage stamina, and there's a lot of dice rolling, so there's quite a bit of luck involved, but there's ways to mitigate those things. It's a nice, simple, rules overhead, but very challenging because you've got to try and push your luck at certain times and, managing your stats and your money. You can buy things at a market. There's lots of upgrades and weapons and things like that. So I'll talk about this more at a future time when I've got to play it some more. But, first impressions, I guess you could say, of Valka, quite fun. I'm looking forward to trying the multiplayer mode. It seems like it has a bit more to it because you start to develop like front lines and back lines of creatures that you're fighting with. There's a bit more, a bit more going on in the multiplayer by the looks of it. But yeah, really, really cool so far. And I'm keen to play some more of it. And also with my other game I've been playing solo is one that has been arriving all around Australia at this point and, of course, overseas, and that's 20 Strong. Did either of you guys back 20 Strong?
No, I saw it. I just didn't want it to be my first Chip Theory games that I backed.
Ah, yes.
I just saw it and I thought it looked cheating. Fine. Yeah, it looked fine, but I wasn't super intrigued by it. And yeah, I would like to know what you think about it and how it went.
No, I didn't. I didn't back it either. No.
Cool. Well, I think Adrian probably summed it up right there. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like it's kind of funny because it's going to sound a lot like Valka that I just described. You've got monsters you're trying to beat. You're rolling lots of dice. You're pushing your luck sometimes with trying to hold back dice because you've got a pool of them you're trying to manage. Look, the production's beautiful. They're the plastic cards that you've come to know in Chip Theory games, but they've got foiling on them. The artwork is really, really cool as well. Now, I played a full game through of 20 Strong today, and I won. Granted, I didn't put it on a hard difficulty. I was just trying to get the feel of it. But as I was playing the game, I kept thinking, this just kind of feels like Doom Machine. Do you remember that game I talked about a while back? Yeah, it's a little tin game, and you have dice, and you're trying to roll them to do damage to the machine parts. Meanwhile, all those machine parts are running a program over and over again. You've got to try and manage, you know, the damage or the, you know, the locking of dice that they do to you. And I just thought, this scratches the same itch, but I think Doom Machine just did it better. Because I guess I'd have to try it on hard mode, 20 strong. It just adds objectives that you're trying to achieve at the same time of just trying to get through the game and beat the monsters. So it's more that the complexity and the difficulty of the game expands because it starts to pull you in two directions. Like, you need to kill this thing, but you're also trying to do this objective that might not line up at the same time. You can play without those objectives, and they do recommend that for the first game, which is what I did, and just focus on getting the flow of the game. But yeah, Doom Machine, I think, just did it better. I don't know what else to say about it, to be honest. Strong,
it should be just 20 fine.
Wait, do you have high expectations because it's Chip Theory Games and therefore it's a very high bar to meet? Do you find that?
I don't think that was the case. I mean, I remember when backing it, I knew kind of what the game was about. I guess I hoped that there would be a little bit more complexity, but it's kind of essentially all you're doing is you've got a hero and you've got three stacks of monsters, and every turn you have to choose one monster from on top of one of those stacks and bring it into the forefront, and that's the one you're going to battle. And you choose any amount of dice from your dice pool, you roll them, and you allocate any of the hits. If you manage to, you have some stat strategy, I think is called the stat, where you can essentially have that many goes at rolling dice before then the monster attacks. But you're trying to not let them do that because you have very minimal health in this game. And I guess the interesting decision-making comes in that lots of the monsters have effects that, you know, mess around with your dice or your strategy in some way. But when you kill them, you get an item or a one-time benefit. You might heal a bit, up your stats, though, that you have more strategy or more recovery, which is at the end of a fight and encounter round, you get to pull some of the dice back that you spent. But you're trying to not spend too much because you don't get them all back. You're only getting a certain amount. So, and it's kind of that rinse and repeat over and over until one of the stacks is fully depleted, and then you get to attempt the boss if you want to, or you can do it when all the minions are gone. And there's four different bosses you can face in the Solar Sentinels deck. Now, obviously, they've got a Too Many Bones version and a Hoplomachus Victorum one as well. I didn't back those because I like those games, but I'm not, you know, I didn't feel like I needed extra decks. I just went with their new IP, which looked really cool. But yeah, it's a nice production. There's some interesting decisions, but after a few plays, I can see this kind of just feeling samey. I mean, it's a small box game. It didn't cost much. I can't expect the world from it, but I don't know. I guess I just, because I played Doom Machine and it felt very similar, and it felt more clever with programs cycling and you're trying to keep up with destroying them as they just keep churning out, I felt that was more fun for some reason. So anyway, I'm not going to get rid of it. It's a nice small form factor. I'll bring it, you know, on road trips, and I'll play it here and there. But yeah, that's kind of my thoughts on 20 Strong.
Just out of interest, I only saw the pictures of it, but the dice look really unusual.
Yeah, so they've done something that other dice manufacturers have done, where they put hollow flakes in the dice, and they're a semi-transparent color. I don't think they stuck the landing with that. Production issues aside, and lots of people have been talking about that, I just don't feel like the dice match the game. I think they could have had some nicer looking dice, some cooler ones without that hollow, you know, glittery effect.
Yeah.
Mm. So anyway, it is what it is.
I have something interesting that you'll love, Jules.
Go for it.
And Mitch ain't here to stop me.
Okay.
So
we're talking about KDM.
Yes, that's right. Yes. Uncle Indana. Right. I just want to bring this to the light, right?
Okay.
So I've done 3 campaigns of KDM.
Mm-hmm.
We got to the 12th Lantern year, the 17th Lantern year, and we're currently on the 22nd Lantern year.
Ooh. Right? Yep.
So that's 51 sessions.
Uh-huh.
At 3.5 hours per average session, which is 178.5 hours total.
Mm.
By the $400, if you divide that up, it's $2.24 a play.
That's good value.
That is insane. That's not even per person. We can strip it down to per person if you like, which 56 cents or something.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's, and this is the thing, like, we just had some stuff happening in the game because of where we are and what's been happening in the game. And it's like totally changed the game and flipped on its head. And that's been really good and refreshing.
Because
not that it got stale, but you're building up to this point in the game. And now it's like, oh, hang on. This is really different and this is really cool. So I'm really glad that we stuck with it. But in saying that, if we all die and it ends, I'm not doing it again. I'm done. I'm out. I just mean, like, and that's the thing. The Wednesday groups have been fantastic for me, like, everything, like, emotionally, mentally, just even just having a regular group. There's something nice about that in your life to have some consistency.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really enjoyed every aspect of that and to get to know the guys really, really well, because we knew each other beforehand, but not like amazingly well, not like now, not like now when one of the people can just be eating his pad thai and say the words fat boy and then the whole table just laughs for no reason.
Mm.
And then the entire night, everybody for no reason just looks down at the ground and mutters the word fat boy. Like, we all mock each other. It's just become this crazy, weird sort of group that's been built from this crazy game. And yeah, I've loved the journey. And even though I say I wouldn't do it again, that's because I'd like to try and do something different with the same group.
Yes. Okay.
And I love the game. And we've got one of the guys, G Money, he's actually going to paint Slender Man. And I'm still painting some of the other bits. And I think in the future, maybe like it might be 2, 3, 4 years or whatever, I would definitely revisit this game with more content in it.
Yes.
But after, you know, it's like, you know, when you get that far, then you have to start again. And then you get that far again, then you got to start again. You're only seeing that first half of the game.
Yes. Yeah.
So for us to now be past that threshold, and I mean, we're now 22 or 23 years out of 36.
Yes.
We are getting to that sort of second third. So yeah, it's been a great journey. And it's another thing as well. Like, we've said it a million times, like, you've got to give these games a chance. Whereas this thing, I feel like you've got to give this game 2.5 years.
Yes.
You know,
does this classify as a binge? Sort of like after the question of the pod, is this a binge? Is that like what this is?
No, it's like, I think a binge would be like, we are going to play this every Sunday for 12 hours and do big sessions like a D&D group. This has just been consistent. Like, this has been a really good consistency of just, because we play other games and meet up at different times and do different things. We don't just solely have played this. And if one of the people can't make the Wednesday for whatever reason, we tend to meet up anyway and still play something different. But we never play as a 3 and AI or, you know, control the other person's character without them there. That's like forbidden. We just haven't done that yet. And I don't think we ever would.
I played in a group of 3 for a little while for Kingdom Death, and we just named that extra one Meat Shield. And when he died, we got Meat Shield the 2nd and the 3rd and the 4th. Yeah. And just kept the legacy going.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. But like, yeah, it's just, this is something about that game that's really, I've really, really enjoyed the journey. And
yeah.
I think the group has as well, because it's just been hilarious.
You'll get some expansions that you mix into the early game, and it drastically changes things.
Yeah. Well, we just, every time, like, we meet, we speak for 90 minutes before we play.
Mm.
And then we start to set the game up because we're just talking rubbish and catching up and all that kind of stuff. But Anyway, I have spoken about KDM quite a lot on this podcast, and for anyone that doesn't
know, didn't know.
Yeah, me. You'll find out. But yeah, honestly, it's a boss battler game set in an incredibly dark universe. It's really worth checking out. I know it has the high price point. I get that. But if I look at this now, then I look at, say, Frostpunk, that I've played like 3 times, and it cost me more than $400 for all the stuff I had for it. You know, and the enjoyment of Frostpunk is great. Like, it's a great game. It's fantastic. And it's also very thematic. And it just adds, it's very dark, it just like KDM, but it doesn't have that fun factor. It's very serious. Whereas this just has that crazy fun factor. And these, with the dice rolls and the random chances of like just losing a character for no reason.
Yes.
He's dead. You're like, oh, what? You couldn't stop any of it, you know? And I've really enjoyed all of that. It's been great. So,
that's really good.
Yeah.
I was going to talk about something similar, because I actually had my game group over today, a bunch of really great ladies that I've met in the hobby. We were celebrating each other's birthdays, and it was really lovely. But we ended up playing Earth, and I know that you've mentioned it before, Adrian. Jules, have you played Earth?
I haven't played Earth yet, no.
Oh, anyway, I know Adrian sort of cooled on it a little bit after a while, but as we sat there and played it, everybody really enjoyed it, and I have played it before, but anyway, I just really love that it's almost multiplayer solitaire, really. That's what it is, and I know that there are some people that despise that.
Yeah,
I despised no interaction or whatever. And I actually asked the ladies that were around the table, I said, do you guys like this? Do you like that, you know, we're just sitting here talking to ourselves sort of thing on in our own little thing? And they all went, yeah, I really like this. I just thought, I don't know, there's just something about that. I don't know what it is, but I really love that way of playing. It's like doing a puzzle, I guess, or something like that. But we still talk and we still joke and make comments or whatever. But I don't know, just that I really don't mind just those games where there's really no interaction at all. Mm. And I don't know whether that's kind of sad, but.
It's not sad. Like, I love a lot of games that don't have any interaction. But I think as I've got more, not social, because I've always been super social, but I've got a real appreciation for games where people can mess other people up and it's the person doing it rather than the game. And like, I used to hate that. I used to hate that so much. I used to be infuriated and I didn't like any of those kind of games. But I don't know, like, there's just something about them that I've got more intrigue. I think I just like people. So, and I know that it's the same, like it's not the same thing, like playing a solitaire game with a group of people is just as fun, just as nice. Like, you can have great conversation and banter and chaos, but there's just something about someone doing something to you and affecting your game where you have to pivot tactically, but you also have to pivot emotionally, because you have to be able to deal with it. And I never used to deal with it. I was like, I hated that stuff. Like, when Def was talking about John Company and how great it was, I was like, nope. I don't want anything to do with that. I don't want people messing with my stuff. I just want to do my own thing. But, you know, I've been playing some over the past year, you know, June, I've played John Company, even the elements of Barrage that I didn't used to sort of partake in, you know, just try and do my own little engine after playing a lot on BGA and also a lot in person. It's just the way it goes. Like, you just got to steal stuff and be a bit brutal.
You just got to stick a pole in their spokes.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's what I want to do in games.
That's a good way of putting it.
Someone's riding along like, oh, I've got this strategy going. I come along with a pole and just bang.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even to the point of like Veiled Fate, Bristol, all these games, I mean, they're not as drastically bad because they're Veiled Fate's a bit longer, but Bristol and things like that are a bit shorter. But I definitely enjoyed games with more player interaction in my, I would say, even the past 6 months. Like it's been that recent, you know.
Right.
If you look at my top 10, it's more Pipeline, Teo, you know, Brass has got more interaction in it, but like, you know, I just like those games where I get to do my own thing and no one's going to mess me up too much. But I definitely am enjoying the more interactive games these days, but not area control games.
I don't like area control games.
give me that stuff. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I might talk about my sizzling game because we're on the topic of games where you get up in each other's business and destroy stuff.
Here we go.
I was very impressed by this. I'd seen it being delivered, but didn't back this. I got to play it with Julian in our community. That's Last Light. I'm sure you guys have seen this floating around.
Oh, this Roy is the guy from Dice Tower.
Yes, Roy Canaday. Yep. Yeah. So he's the designer of it. And when it was on crowdfunding, it was pitching itself as like a 4X game in an hour. And I was like, oh, wow, okay, that's a big thing to try and achieve. And you know what? I think he did a pretty good job. I've only played this once, but I was really impressed. So Last Light, you're trying to race to 20 victory points. And you have a hand of cards, which are different actions. You've got cards that let you build extractors, that let you get resources from different planets. You've got a command card, which lets you move and attack with your ships. You've got cards that let you do research, so you can upgrade tech and customize your small, medium, and large ships. And you've also got a card that brings back all the card action cards to your hand, basically. So you're going to be cycling through all of these actions. There's a couple more I didn't mention. But each card is really simple, and in a round, basically, everyone will choose a card and put it face down, reveal simultaneously, and they have a number order in which they're executed. And so you go around and you do that. And the board is really cool. It has a nice little gimmick to it, but it actually really changes up the game. Is it has the two center circles that actually rotate. So, and they rotate at different degrees as well. So they make different lineups, and when you move your ships in, it means they circle around the board without you having to move them, and you end up adjacent to other areas you would have taken a long time to get to. The combat's really simple. It's always the attacker doing damage. There's no defending. So you've just got to time your attacks tactically. And
that makes things faster.
Much faster, yeah. Either hit or you miss, and small ships take one damage to die, medium two, large three. Mm. Very streamlined, very simple. But you're trying to get light points in different ways. There are some upgrades that let you get light points, but ultimately you're also trying to get to the middle. You want to have sectors controlled but not blockaded, meaning there's no enemies in that area when you go to collect light. And if you go to the very center where the star is, when everyone has played their card that brings back all the cards, that's what triggers changing of first player and the rotating of the board, and all the ships you have in the very center, each one of them will give you light. So the game's so cleverly designed to pull everyone towards the middle, because that's where you're going to get lots of points, and you got to fight each other for control of these areas. It's really, really clever, and there's definitely some strategy that I thought about after playing it that I'd like to implement next time. The rules teach, we literally opened up the rule book and just read it, and we were able to learn the game in about 15 minutes. Really simple, played nice. In about an hour, even just with a fresh rules teach, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was really great. I don't think it has a super lot of longevity, because we kind of saw most of the tech cards and things like that. And there'll be different strategies you can implement. But for what it's trying to achieve, I was very impressed. And the production is beautiful.
What's the main like action selection thing for it? Like what?
So you have a card, put it face down and simultaneously reveal. That's it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Very, very simple. Very smooth, very simple to execute. The actions are easy to understand. Yeah.
What's the purpose of the rotating?
What it's really doing, I think, it's arguable that it doesn't need to be in the game, but what it does is if you have ships on that area, it means you're going to get to the other side of the board quicker because the ships will move with the rotations. Mixes up the whole board.
Yeah.
So you might send ships out from your base forward and then, two rounds later, the board's shifted and they're no longer in front of your base. They're in front of your enemy's base. Mm. And now you can jump to a planet that they control and take that much quicker.
That's
so,
very interesting.
Yeah, it's quite cool. I really, really enjoyed it and would absolutely play it again. That's Last Light.
Cool. Well, dude, I don't really have a proper sizzle this week, and I will go into the reasons why.
Okay.
I played Nucleum, and it was great, and I loved it, and it was super interesting and super, in depth with the actions and stuff, but I played one of the major rules wrong.
Oh.
And I've played it since solo without that rule, with that rule,
corrected.
And I can see it. And we actually halfway through the game when we realized what the rule was, we just ended a round because the game just goes, every player has the same amount of turns, right? So there's no turn order change. We ended that round and then we just started to play with that rule being part of the core game so that we didn't, program our brains to then accept the old rule because it's a mix of this sort of brass and barrage game. There's rules in there that you're like, that can't be right because it's not like this and this. Do you know what I mean? There was a little bit of that and there was a bit, we just got the rules wrong. Hey, it happens, but we all played it wrong. And so no one was actually at a specific disadvantage. So yeah, I'm going to make it kind of my oath, but I want to play that game again a couple more times because when we changed the rule, it made it ridiculously tighter, like insanely, and so brutal. I was like, this seems really brutal. This is like barrage level. I've just built a dam with four elevation above you and stolen everything you've just worked on for the past hour. I want to play it again and make sure I'm playing it completely properly. But yeah, I can almost guarantee this game will be getting sizzled very soon
because
it was that good when we changed that rule. Because when I played it before, I was like, it seems really easy. It seems pretty loose. Like you can just do this, do that. But the way the networks work and how you connect to different networks and stuff is so pivotal. Yeah, it looked brilliant. So my sizzle will come in the future when I've played it properly. But I bet you that this happens a lot. I bet you a bunch of people have played, not necessarily this game, but they've played games and then maybe two or three plays through, they've gone, hang on, that's not what it says here in this book. Do you know what I mean? Or they've got something wrong or they've watched a video and
yes, got it through. Yes, happens all the time. And then in the chat, someone says, we played this rule wrong. And it completely changes the game.
So it's not a... it's not something that happens often, but it definitely does happen. And a heavy game like this, this has a lot of rules. This is a lot of the way things score, the way action tiles work, the way the networks work, where you can build different things, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I will get back to you all in the future.
All right. Sounds good.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
Because you were very hyped up for that one.
It's really good.
Cool. Thanks for that not sizzle, Adrian.
Yeah.
What's your sizzle?
Okay, so I am going to sizzle another hidden gem. This is the day of hidden gems. I don't know if you've heard of this game, but it came once again from prolific researching. And I think I got it last year probably, but I taught this at the barbecue day one time. It was last year anyway. Nobody seems to know about this game, but it's called Icky.
I know Icky.
I-K-I.
Yep.
And, a lot of people I've spoken to about it and they've never heard of it. It doesn't seem to get much interest. It's just one of those games that was sort of in the hotness for a bit and then gone.
And
this is a really really good game. It, I wish that it was certainly more well known. It's published by a company called Sorry We Are French, which I absolutely love that name.
It's very funny.
Yeah. It's a very, very high quality production, really well done. And actually, it just came out with an expansion just recently. It's kind of hard to get, but it has come out with an expansion. But the game is set in Japan, and it's in Edo, Japan, which, and I must say, I don't know if you guys think about this, but I love rule books that are based on fact or based on some kind of history, and they put that in the rule book. I absolutely love that, and they do that in this particular rule book. And so it's set in a particular part of Japanese history called the Edo period.
Mm-hmm.
So it's between the 17th and 19th century. And the city is called Nihonbashi, it's called. I hope I pronounced that correctly. Lauren will probably correct me. But it was, which was sort of like a market area in Tokyo. And there were little sort of houses all around it. And apparently there were 700 to 800 known professions operating in this market area.
Yeah, wow.
It's so interesting. And all the cards have like people with their occupations, and it was like kite maker. You know, little things like that. One of them was bubble blower. I think one of them's called bubble blower. But just these really insignificant things that you wouldn't think would be a profession, but they were professions. And so you've got three meeples. They are named in Japanese names, but I'm not going to pronounce them because I think I might do a poor job of it. But a big meeple, medium meeple, and the little meeples. And your big meeple is going to move sort of like in a rondelle system around the town. And so you're going to be able to hire merchants to be able to work in your stores and put them to work. And eventually, hopefully, they'll retire and increase in experience. And the idea is that you're contributing, or you're gaining iki. And iki is thought to be like living a good civic life. That's mm-hmm. where that word comes from. So that's the name for the victory points in the game, and hence the name of the game.
We have the same thing in Queensland. It's just called Don't Be a Dick.
God, way to bring it down.
Queenslander.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And now where was I? So anyway, you're moving around in this rondelle system, and you're going to be interacting with these merchants. And this is where you can buy fish, because there used to be a vibrant fish market in this particular part of this city or this area in Tokyo. You can buy pipes and tobacco pouches. And there's this other really interesting part of it. You're sort of trying to increase, as in part of the game, you're trying to increase your firefighter ability. Now, this sounds really weird. It sounds like it doesn't fit in with the game at all. But and I remember I taught it to someone, and she said that this doesn't fit. And actually, she went and researched it on Google. And actually, there used to be a lot of fires, apparently, because, you know, the shops and everything were made out of paper and things like that. And actually, it was very common that they would just get ravaged by fire.
This is one of the things I know about the game, is the village can burn down.
Yes, that's right, because you lost all your people that you hired.
Yes.
So it's got that sort of interesting thing about it, but it's got like a really nice level of interaction, because at the start of the game, you're placing your medium-sized meeple out to choose how many spaces you will be able to move around this rondelle, and the least number of spaces gets first in turn order. So it's a nice puzzle between I really need to get here before someone else gets here because I really want to buy that fish, because a large part of the game is set collection. But at the same time, you're sort of trying to think, I need to be first in turn order, otherwise I'm not going to get there. I'm not going to get that. And it's so good, and it's so smooth, and just the whole game is so set out so well. And I should explain that it's basically 13 turns in the game. You're playing a turn per month of a year, and then you have a small New Year period, almost like a Chinese, it's not Chinese, is it? But a New Year period where you get to do a special action. But so there's only 12 turns in the game, and you're trying to collect sets of people that you hire, I guess, merchants, and trying to get sets of fish and tobacco pouches and to try and get victory points.
It sounds great. It sounds really interesting. The fact that you don't really like massive like interaction, but there's enough in there for it to be interesting but not too invasive. Is that
So you're trying to interact with other people's merchants because you own them. And you have a little meeple placed on them. When you hire them, you put a little meeple on them. But when someone else uses them, and when you hire someone, you try and hire someone that people will want to interact with. But at the same time, it benefits you when they interact with them. It's going to be better for you. They're going to get more experience and then retire, and they're going to score you points at the end of the game.
Crucial question.
Crucial.
What's it smell like?
Oh, my God.
And hang on, you can't give me, you have to say it between two games. So, like, it's better than this, but it's not as good as that.
Oh, okay. look, I would say it's not quite Stonemaier. So Stonemaier is top. And top then dog. It's in between Stonemaier and, what would another one be? Maybe Teo or something like that.
Oh, it's up there then. It's up there.
It's very good. It's got this gorgeous print inside the box and all throughout the box. Oh, my God, it is so good. Yeah. Anyway, but forget about the artwork and the fact that these meeples, these beautiful painted meeples with included top knot on the big meeple.
No, nice.
It is a really, really good game, and actually the people that I have taught it to have bought it because it's this is a game that husbands should buy their wives or their partners or whatever, because it's something that I think would appeal to a partner. I think it's a beautiful, beautiful game and a beautiful production. And the fact that the history is there is so interesting. I just love this game, and I highly recommend it. It's very, very good.
Yeah, I've picked up the box many times when I was working at a game store because we had a few copies there, and I nearly bought it a few times because it is a beautiful game. It looks really, really nice. I have to give it a go sometime.
Mm. Yeah, it's best with the four people. It's best with four. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
All right, so that's Icky. Yeah.
Icky.
Very good. All right, well, with all of our sizzles and the games we've been playing recently done and talked about, we better move on to some news and announcements. So I'm going to go to some things that are happening very soon. We've got the Sydney Game Day that's coming up on the 9th of December from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. Grab your tickets now. Things are selling out quite fast. This is the last one for this year in Sydney, so we're going to go out with a bang. It's going to be a lot of fun. But also, we've got the Brisbane Game Day coming up on the 30th of December, New Year's Eve, as we've been saying it. And it's a big one. It's from 10 a.m. to 2 a.m. the next morning. So we'll see who sticks around. But
I'm going to start games at midnight. So bang on midnight, I'm going to start playing stuff. I don't know what it will be. Probably Bristol, because that's my go-to now.
Yeah.
But to be honest, I was a bit worried about the game day because there wasn't like a bunch of people jumping into it. I was like, oh, maybe everyone's like away and this is going to be like me and seven people like in this spot. But that's definitely changed over the past 2 weeks. Like it's, we're definitely getting up there now. So it's still like well over 6 weeks away, and yeah, it'll be interesting. I think it'll be they'll all be gone pretty soon. So
yeah, that's it. So grab your tickets for either one of those if you're local or traveling over the Christmas period. The other thing to talk about, of course, is PlayCon. So in between the last episode, our tickets went live. Very exciting. Lots of things were happening.
What a crazy experience that was, to be honest. Like, it was insane. Like, I really enjoyed it. It was really fun.
Like, yeah, Mitch and I did a live stream to sort of launch the tickets and just answered questions that the community had, just hung around and talked about, you know, what have planned for it and things like that. So, yeah, PlayCon the tickets are live now. So go to play-con.com if you are interested in attending a 3-day dedicated board game convention in Sydney. It's going to be a lot of fun. I guess the thing to point out at this point is within the first 48 hours of the tickets going live, a quarter of it was sold. And I can tell you that percentage has jumped again. So, you know, get on this. Don't wait around. I don't know how many tickets will be left in the new year. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I got
that actually shocked me a little bit because I you know, me and Jules and Mitch obviously did quite a lot of the background work for this. So we sort of speculated what we thought would happen, and my guess was substantially lower than the reality. So yes. It's kind of really nice that everyone rallied together, and it was like uniting the clans in Braveheart. That's how I felt. Like, united the clans, you know, and the Irish prince guy, whoever he was, like, he just that's our community, and they just came in and we just wasted the English. Like, it was great. Like, I can't explain it probably because I haven't seen Braveheart in about 20 years, but like, everyone just rocked up. Everyone's like, I bought a ticket, I got a ticket, everyone ticket, ticket, ticket. And it just went really, it was really emotional, actually. And it was really nice to see everybody. We needed that support. We still do need that support. So if you could share it with your friends, share it with your local gaming groups, like, get the word out there. Because, yeah, we really want this to be a thing that we can continue to do year after year.
So. Yeah.
Apparently you cried like a baby.
Of course. That's right.
Well, you know, the fun doesn't stop there. There'll be some exciting news next week to do with some PlayCon stuff. So keep your eyes on the website for that. Speaking of PlayCon as well, we'd like to thank a couple of the sponsors for that. So we've got Leader Games, who are a publisher out of St. Paul, Minnesota. They make exciting asymmetric games that are very narrative-driven and lots of fun to play. They're best known for Vast, The Mysterious Manor, Root, Fort, Oath, and Ahoy. They make lots of great games, so thank you so much to Leader Games for believing in what we're doing and sponsoring PlayCon.
They're Ahoy expansions, actually, on Kickstarter, I think, at the moment.
Yes, it is.
Checking that out.
I think it's on
GameFound
or Backer Kit or something.
Yeah, it's on one of them.
Yeah.
It's live. So.
So, yeah, actually, I need to check that out because I quite enjoyed Ahoy. It was very, very clever. And expansions with new factions, I'm there for that. We've also got another sponsor we want to mention this week, which is Behold Games. So Behold Games is a store in Ultimo, Sydney. Tina is the one who runs that store. She's awesome. They do meetup events every Thursday night in the shop for a $5 entry, and you get access to the games library. She also runs the Board Game Cruise event, and details for 2025 will go up early next year. There's heaps of dice in store. You're welcome to make special requests for games, and Tina will probably source those and get them in for you. So check out Behold Games, and thank you to Behold Games and Tina, who runs that, for sponsoring PlayCon.
Yeah, massive thanks to Behold Games and Tina. I'd never actually met Tina before a few months ago when we actually did a Sydney Game Day and you guys did Two Rooms and a Boom.
Oh, yes.
And that's really cool because that's someone I've spoken to online quite a lot and never met before, but it's really nice when you meet the people and they're just awesome. And Tina was really kind and awesome to let us run our Patreon Game Day when we did the Powerhouse Museum live podcast. So the following day or the day prior, we actually got to have all our Patreons there, hang out and play board games all day. And she let us do it in that space in the city. It's a great space. If you're ever in Sydney City and you're there for work or holiday or anything, it's definitely worth just swinging by because there's people playing games there most nights. So, yeah.
Very good. All right. Well, with all that news done, we'll move on to our question of the pod.
Hey guys, Adrian here, and I'd like to talk to you guys about Advent Games, who directly support this podcast and our Sydney Game Days.
Hey, Adrian, are you talking about Advent Games?
I am.
How awesome are they?
They're great, mate.
Hey, wait. I love the website.
Hey, Dan, are you talking about Advent Games?
We are talking about Advent Games.
I love how they have $10 shipping inside of Sydney and $15 flat rate shipping outside of Sydney, outside of the metro area.
Yeah. Makes it so much easier when you're checking out the website, all the different categories. Ah, the best. New releases, upcoming.
And Dean also has an incredible newsletter he sends out at the end of every week. So please make sure that you get on his mailing list.
Yeah. Sorry, Adrian, we didn't mean to interrupt as you were.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I also love Advent Games. And I have bought games for them at the Sydney Game Day myself and even flown them back in my luggage from Sydney to Brisbane. Dean's an awesome dude who is very community focused, and you'll even see him at game nights throughout Sydney area.
Mm-hmm. And he was one of the very first sponsors of the Board Game Barbecue podcast. So thanks very much for being a long standing and loyal sponsor of the show. We love you.
Thanks, Dean.
Thanks, Advent.
So, last week's question of the pod, what game have you binged and how much? Now, I was thinking about an answer to this one, and Cloud Spire was the one that came to mind. When I got that game, I played it nonstop and burnt through a lot of the solo scenarios very quickly. But it's been sporadic since then. However, another game came to mind, which during lockdowns, I played a lot online with a few people, and that's Super Fantasy Brawl. I played that game so much. I haven't played it a lot since, you know, that period of time, but I was playing it so hard. I have logged on my BG Stats app 173 plays of it. I went hard.
Oh my god.
It's a great game. I could. And look, I feel like I could play 173 more. It is just fantastic. But I need to paint my minis for that one. I'm waiting to paint it up and I'll bring it to the game days and we can have some tournaments of it.
Yeah, nice. For me, I look back through my whole history of board gaming and being on this podcast and stuff. One of them was definitely the first season of Pandemic, because that was when lockdown and stuff was happening. So we didn't have anything to do. So we were playing that a lot. Even though Brisbane didn't really get any proper lockdowns, you couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't just go out and wander around. You had to sort of stay at home and, you know, go from work to home. And then the other one was when I tried to beat $1,500 in Pipeline. And I just binge played that thing so much. Played like five times in the day. And I remember on the fifth time I leaned over the table and was like a bit emotional about it. I was like, I don't want to play anymore. No more. And MJ's like, we can do it. You're so close. And then, yeah, I kept with it and managed to rack up a decent score. So, yeah, Pipeline would be the one that sticks out in my brain because I'm like, I'm not doing that again. I'm not trying to beat 2,000. I'm not doing that. It's just stupid. So.
Well, for me, it has to be Ark Nova. I was just actually, while you were talking, I thought I'll quickly go into my BGA account and have a look. And it says 125 plays.
Oh, wow. And
Ark Nova?
Yeah.
Are you a time traveler? Like, how the hell did you do that?
Oh, God. I'm not doing anything at home, clearly. Anyway.
Well, you are. You're playing Ark Nova.
Okay, let me rephrase. I'm not achieving anything. But 28 victories. Oh, my God. What am I even doing?
Oh, my God.
What am I doing?
Just hitting the buttons at this point. You're not even looking.
I am just not even getting the hint, am I?
Wait, how many times did you say you played it?
125 plays, 28 victories.
So you got a 22% strike rate for victories.
Oh my God, that's terrible. And I'm still playing.
You're having fun.
Are you having fun?
Yes, I love it.
Good.
Love it.
There you go. Just get good.
Oh God. All right, let's read some of these responses from the community about the games they've binged. Adrian, do you want to read off a couple?
Yeah. So we had GM Radio X from Twitter say, "We binged a lot of Hero Realms and Pixel Tactics Deluxe when we got them, around 50 plays of each." I never heard of Pixel Tactics
Deluxe. Me neither.
No, I haven't heard of it either.
I have to look that one up. We also had Better Half Reviews on Instagram say, "I've played so much Next Station London on BGA, and for the physical games, lots and lots of Keep the Heroes Out."
Ah, yes.
So, yeah, that's I know that one, the Keep the Heroes Out. But Next Station London, never heard of it. So that's another game.
It's a cool game, that one.
Yeah, okay, cool. And then A Tale of Two Meeples from Instagram also said, "We played Castles of Burgundy 6 times in the first 3 days we had it. We almost ran through the entire Machikoro Legacy campaign between Christmas and New Year's a while back." So they did that a while back. But yeah, that's a good effort as well.
That's a great time of year to binge.
Yeah, especially, I have to say, especially if you're in the Northern Hemisphere, because it's cold,
yes, and it's dark. Yes.
No one wants to do anything. It's great. It's the best time to just binge board games at Christmas.
You need a partner, though. That's what I'm missing. I need a board game buddy, a live-in one.
Yeah.
Maybe I should get like a student and rent out a room and say, must play board games.
Yeah, give it a go.
Oh, dear. All right, Dana, other Facebook responses. What have we got?
From Lee Hath. "For me, it was Marvel Legendary. Naively, I thought I could play every combination and even use a spreadsheet to track it. Racked up 60-plus plays, but it turns out they can make new box sets quicker than I can play them."
Yeah, nice.
Melanie Barr, "While on vacation to my hometown, my cousin and I played one deck dungeon from noon to midnight for a week and loved it."
Wow.
Felicity Grace, "My partner and I binged Pandemic and later the various legacy versions, often two, sometimes three games in one night, multiple times a week. We will have years-long breaks in between, but Pandemic will forever be in my collection with a special place in my heart. We similarly binged Viticulture with Tuscany, playing every night for a time. Wonderful memories. Viticulture still gets a lot of play, not overplayed like Pandemic."
Yeah, nice.
And Mandalorian, "Marvel Champions, 110 plays and counting. Perfection in a box."
It's great when you find those games where you just like, you just want more, 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 more. Yeah.
So that's a great game to play solo. So you can just,
yeah.
I would say that a lot of those plays are solo, if I had to guess. Mandalorian, let us know on the Facebook when we post up the episode. But I would like to know how many were solo, because it's such a soloable game. Like, a lot of people play that game solo. It's so good on the table as well, because you have everything in front of you. And I mean, like, Connor, Dan, a heap of, even Mike used to play it solo a lot. So it'll be quite interesting to see how much of that was solo play. So
this week's question of the pod, we're heading towards late November here. So that's, it's no secret Christmas around the corner. The shops are full of decorations already and all the Christmas cakes and whatnot. So we're ready to launch in with a Christmas question. So this week's question is, if you could only get one game from Santa for Christmas this year, what would it be? So this might be a little bit cheating, but...
Oh, okay. Mine's already controversial, but go for it.
It's already purchased and under the tree?
Actually, I don't even know if I could say this because I won't be able to do it for Christmas. I want a Wave 4 pledge for all the new Kingdom Death stuff that's yet to come. But I can't get that game physically yet. I need to think of something I can get physically.
No, that's okay to say that. Like, that's what you want. Like, that you want it early. Like, you want it prototype pre-printed or whatever.
But it's not
that's
even
fine.
Possible. How can you get a Wave 4 pledge?
Yeah,
impossible.
I got a Kickstarter pledge for my birthday present this year. MJ got it for me. Like,
already?
That's all right.
Oh.
No, like in March. Like, I chose to get, rather than get any presents or anything physical, she backed it for me. Like, and I'm happy with that. I mean, MJ's only MJ. This is Santa. Like, he can do anything, kids.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay, so impossible.
Good.
Yep, impossible kingdom death. Got it.
That's yes. Right. Mine's even slightly more impossible than that. So
oh, really?
Santa, you got to dig deep, man. You better be digging deep, Santa, because mine is hell. The last Saga.
Oh, I should have thought of that. Yes.
Mythic Games, where are you at? Like, what are you doing? Just, I know that you're going to charge me an extra $150, but if Santa's doing it for free, I'm not going to have to pay it, so it's fine. Like, I want that game so badly.
Same.
That's going to replace my KDM game. But yeah, that obviously Mythic Games, obviously I don't know what's going on. I don't really read the news. All I know is that game's not coming and they just disappear and all they do is ask for more money to complete things, which is fine. That's the world. But yeah. I want that game. And if they turned around and said, we want $150 and we're going to guarantee you this game, I'd just flick that money straight away. I wouldn't even think about it. I want it that badly. I want it that badly that I would just pay double what I paid the pledge for it just to get it.
Wow. All right.
That's it.
Yeah, I
don't tell them that. Don't tell them that. Because Santa's on the hookup. It's technically free. So, yeah.
All right, Dana, one game for Christmas. What would it be?
I want two things for Christmas.
No, you get one.
A Christmas card from Tom Bassel.
Oh.
Naked.
God. So that would be my first wish. And secondly, I have been trying to find a copy of Come Sail Away since Lauren taught it to me at South by Southwest.
Ah, right.
It's by Sashi and Sashi. I cannot find it anywhere. So I would like a copy of that.
Yeah, it's probably in Japan is the only place to get it.
Yes, yeah. So
that's difficult
to get.
That's very difficult. Hmm. Cool. All right. Well, I'm excited to hear what the community has to say. If you could only get one game from Santa for Christmas this year, what would it be? Let us know on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram, and in the Discord as well. I'm keen to see what people's like game they're either waiting for or that one they haven't been able to get their hands on. That's always a fun thing to read over. All right, and with that question of the pod done, we'll move on to our last segment, Swear an Oath. Before we jump into Swear an Oath, we'll just give a shout out to our wonderful patrons. Thank you so much for supporting the show. A special shout out this week to Jameis McNeary, Jace, Craig Summerton, and Anna Josefina Rutkowska. I'm sorry if I pronounced that incorrectly, but thank you.
You did that remarkably well. You have me convinced, even if it's wrong. You've convinced me.
Well, thank you to all of you for supporting the show. We really, really appreciate that.
Does Jace not have a surname? Is it like Sher?
I guess it must be. It's That's like how Drake. It's written in the run sheet.
It's like Drake, Cher, Jace. They're going to have a comeback tour.
Yeah.
If you can't support us on Patreon, there's loads of other ways to do that. As we've said many times before, you can join the Facebook community, the Discord community, leave us a Spotify rating or an Apple Podcast rating. Just listening to the show is a wonderful way to support us as well. We are very, very grateful for anything and everything that you do for us. It means the world to us and it keeps this show alive and going.
Also, in the show notes this time, there will be a link to the PlayCon Facebook event. Please, even if you're not attending PlayCon, but you've got some interest, just sign up. It shows other people that it's interesting, and other people will see it because you've seen it, and it will really help us build something that's going to be like epic. So
fantastic. All right. Oath time. I have not done well. I'm just going to get this out of the way. As I said, I've done a little bit of solo playing, but so before this weekend, I worked 17 of the last 18 days before this weekend. I've been pretty flat out traveling interstate multiple times. So I have not achieved my oath to play Primordial Secrets Awesome Netrunner. Now, I've made a plan, though, because I have put on the scheduled teachers for the Sydney Game Day to teach Primordial Secrets to three other lucky people. I have sleeved the game up. It's ready to go. I've read the rule book. I'm very excited to play it. So that's my plan of action. I also want to try and sneak in some Netrunner on the game day as well. I've bought some sleeves to make some decks. I've made one, but I need to make another with the cards that I have. So I'm working on that currently as well. As for a new oath, I am going to swear an oath, as I talked about earlier on the podcast, that I've been playing a little bit of Valka, but I want to actually dive in and do a full game because I'm very excited by the artwork and all that this game is promising. So I, Jules, swear to play Valka by the time I'm on the next podcast.
I swore, which is, this was the second attempt because I failed last time, I was going to play Pulsar 2849.
Oh, yes, that's right.
This is my Vladimir Suchi quest to play all his games. And I finally got to play it thanks to Ingrid and Shane, who seemed to be helping me get my oaths played. But I was able to play it and I was glad that I did. Really enjoyed it. It's space. So it's space. It's got nice combos and that, but it's space. So I probably prefer some of his other games with a different theme, but I enjoyed it and that was good. So I did do that. Tick. The other thing that I mentioned was about this video setup, which is just taking up a lot of my time trying to get it right. It's 3/4 done.
Okay.
It is 3/4 done. I'm just having a few technical problems.
The technical problems, you playing Ark Nova on BGA?
That's it. I ran out of time. No, technical issues, camera issues, but they will be resolved hopefully very soon. But I have got a setup and I'm going to take a picture of it and put it on Facebook. The ladies today played, what did they play? They played Waterfall Park underneath the video, underneath this big video setup today. And they thought they were being filmed, but I didn't film them. I just recorded their voices. But no. So it's basically done. So I'm hoping to have a crack at videoing a playthrough or something like that.
Fantastic.
Very soon. Yeah. Oh, and yes. My new oath. I just received the latest expansion for the Lost Ruins of Arnak. Called The Missing Expedition. So it's like a little campaign. It's a bit like Revive. It's got a campaign, but you don't have to play the campaign. You can just add the cards if you want to. I'm going to try and play the campaign. I normally am a bit one of those people that will just add the cards in and forget about the campaign, but I'm going to do it.
Okay, cool.
I am going to do it. So that is my oath, and I've got a week because I'm recording the next podcast. So I need to hurry up.
1 week, a campaign game, no problem.
it's only 5 games, so
oh, okay, that's not too bad.
If I only play Ark Nova once a day, I should be right.
Should be fine. Well, as I said earlier in the pod, I wasn't going to be originally here, but I did forewarn people that Shokoku 1889 would get played on November the 24th or 5th at my house.
Yes, you did, yep.
Dana is coming over. It's going to be very awesome. Super looking forward to it. But I will add another one because I did play, we got sent a heap of trick-taking games from All Play Games. And
yes, that's right.
Yeah, from out of the blue. So that was quite cool. But I played Luna today. I only played it with two and I loved it, but MJ did not like it. She just was not her thing. Trick takers, she's can be hit or miss on.
Sure.
But I played Luna and I loved it. And it, I really think it does need the four player though. Like it's still fine with two, but with the four, it gives me those 500 vibes, you know, 500, mm-hmm. the card game. So essentially I'll sit opposite my teammate and then to my left and right are other opponents. So it's like you're on teams. And how it works is you've basically got two decks of cards, light and dark, you know, the moon and eclipse or whatever. And essentially you play a card and let's say I'm leading Jules, right? There's four trumps in the game and you're sitting opposite me and you're my partner. I might play a six with it's got the two decks are different. So one of them has the numbers, one of them has the trumps. So I play a six and the player next to me then plays a bat. So bat is now trump, but it's clear. So they've got nothing on it. So you then have to play a bat to trump that, but then their player after you might play an eight and then they've got the trump and they've won with the eight. Right. So one, you're making a trump of a card with a color and a number as a team. So I might lead with a trump and then you might play a number. But between us, we have a limited amount of numbers and trumps. So I can't just keep leading trumps because eventually I'm going to run out. Right.
That sounds very interesting. But as
it was really good.
As you're explaining it though. I was just having a moment. I swear you're starting to read a script from like the Auntie Donna explanation of the game.
So, like, the same thing
so you need
times.
To get the trump in order to get the trump. Then does that make you win? No, you don't want the trump.
Yeah. Well, and that's another wrinkle in the stupid game. Because if you win three trumps, you then go to 0 points.
Oh, what?
You have to keep winning trumps and get past four, you have to get four, five, and then when you get to six, you get back to five trumps. But three and four trumps is 0 points. So you need to win a certain amount of trumps, otherwise you sit in this zero zone. It's a lot going on, and
so
it's
then
like
you get,
juggling.
We need
so
to
then
play
you get the magical
to,
sword that lets you unlock
play,
the wood.
We need to play articulate. I want you to explain the game without saying the word trump.
Yeah. It's definitely interesting. Let's put it that way. And that was with two players.
Sure, yeah.
You have an open market with two players, and that was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think with four players, it will be really interesting because
cool.
There's that silent, like you playing a trump, then your teammate looking at you and going, "Why did you lead with that? You know, like what are you doing?"
Mm.
And it's kind of that interaction with players that's, you know, silent, which is kind of fun.
Cool. It was called Luna.
Luna.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Alrighty then. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. Thanks, Adrian, and thank you, Dana.
Thank you.
Thanks, bro. It was fun.
Well, thanks, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you soon on the next episode. Bye for now.
Call me Tom.
Tom can be your live-in student.
Oh dear.
Well, you know my husband, he's away a lot.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to stop recording before you say anything too incriminating.